Okay, we're beginning on the top of Nun Vav and Aleph by the two dots. The Gemara here is discussing the end of the ratio of the Mishnah, which says, Echad ha-me'areh ve'echad ha-gomer. Doesn't matter what type of biyah the person had, whether it was ha'ara, which we've discussed until now, ha-gomer biyah, a complete biyah, kana, he's successful at acquiring the yivama, v'lo chilek ben biyah de biyah. There's no distinction drawn between the different biyot that are utilized in this situation. The Mishnah is discussing what the Torah describes of yivama yivo aleha, and that we learned that the primary kinyan that acquires min Torah, a yivama, is biyah. And our Mishnah says, no matter what type of biyah was used, kana, you are successful being konet. Now we're going to deal with a machlok between Rav and Shmuel that discusses how successful are you. Obviously, if the biyah was done properly, and we've seen earlier in the Gemara that the optimal way to do it is with ma'mar, which is kiddushim for yivama, and then with biyah. Even absent the ma'mar, a full-fledged biyah, where the person has the right intent to acquire the yivama, then that is also a proper acquisition or kinyan of the yivama. Our Mishnah gave a description of many different types of biyot that are not necessarily focused on doing the mitzvah, whether it's shogeg, ones, mezid, all different types of scenarios by which the biyah is a suboptimal or subpar biyah. Nevertheless, the Mishnah says, kana. How successful is that? That's a machlok between Rav and Shmuel. Rav amar kana lakol. That kinyan is successful at fully acquiring the woman. Ushmuel amar lo kana ala dvarim amurim beparsha. Things that it is successful at doing is the items that are explicit in the parsha. Liyaresh binichse achiv. To acquire the possessions of his brother, which is that yakum hashem achiv, that he becomes the inheritor, he stands in place of his brother to take his inheritance. And to then release this woman from the need for yibum, that's from a number of standpoints. First of all, this individual who marries her, the brother who is performing the levirate marriage, has another wife from whom he has children. Then if he passes away without having children from this woman, she will not be required to perform yibum because she's a co-wife to his wife that he has children with. Number two is, if he wants to divorce her, he simply gives her a get and does not require chalitza. He's successful at completing the yibum, and therefore there's no need for chalitza anymore. The zikat achiv has now been eliminated through the process of yibum. In addition, it also helps out her co-wives, her tzarot, that they don't require yibum, or they do not require chalitza, because whatever was performed with her was sufficient to release them. And the brothers are also released from having to perform yibum here, because once one house is built, I mean, one of the brothers has taken action, then the other brothers are released from their obligations in this situation. All of those are explicit in the Parshia, as Rashi explains over here. And what Shmuel is saying in this case is that the items that are explicit in the Parshia of Yibum, where the Yavam stands in place or fills the shoes of the deceased brother, those items, this Kinyan is sufficiently strong to deal with. But it is not sufficiently strong to make her into a full-fledged wife, that have it be completed as nisuin. It means that Rav and Shmuel agree that anything that's written in the Parsha is definitely included in this kinyan. That's number one. Number two is, anything that is similar to those items, even if it's not written in the Parsha, will also be included. And that's because of the fact that as long as it's putting the yabam on par or in the same standing as the baal, as the deceased brother, then all of those items are included in this kinyan. And Shmuel and Rav will both agree to that. Their difference of opinion comes in a situation or a circumstance where the Yabam will have rights that exceed those rights that the Baal had, or the original brother who was deceased had. And that nafkamina, which the Gemara is going to explain now, is with regards to truma, the ability of the woman to eat truma if she's an Israelite. If she is a regular Israelite and is not entitled to truma, but she's marrying a Kohen. And by marrying a Kohen, she's then entitled to eat truma. So if her first husband was fully married to her, then she would be entitled to truma. If he was not fully married to her, and now the Yabam acquires her through this subpar bi'ah, then the question between Rav and Shmuel becomes, is she then sufficiently married to this individual that she's entitled to truma? Or is there some deficit in this bi'ah that makes it that it's not a full-fledged nisuin, and therefore she's not entitled to truma, and that's what the Gemara explains now. Mina nisuin. If she was married to the first brother fully, had a fully consummated marriage, the divrei hakol achla. Everybody agrees that she eats truma when the Yabam performs yibum with her, even in a subpar form and a subpar bi'ah. Da'abat kach lami kara. She originally ate from the truma, and now the Yabam is not entitling her to anything that she didn't have before. He's just stepping into his brother's shoes, and whatever his brother would have entitled her to, he is just replicating by having this kinyan with her, and therefore she's entitled to eat the truma. Ki plige, where did Rav and Shmuel argue? Minei rusin. If they were only halakhically engaged before this, the first brother was halakhically engaged to her, then she's not entitled to truma. We're going to deal with this on tomorrow's daf, but with regards to truma, a woman who has erusin min haTorah is entitled to truma, because the pasuk that allows an individual who is, quote-unquote, the property of the Kohen, kinyan kaspo, so that allows his abadim to eat truma, as long as they have a kinyan aguf, which is true of an Eved Kenani. It also is true about the woman, not that she's an Eved Kenani, or not that she's kinyan kaspo, but the mechanism for the kinyan for a woman is through a kinyan kesef, and therefore she's called kinyan kaspo, and that entitles her to truma min haTorah. Nevertheless, we'll see this in the Gemara Ketubot, there's a machloket amoraim as to why we don't do that, and we say that only when she has nisuin is she entitled to eat truma. One amora says that's because of the problem of she's living by her parents. She's living by her family for the 12 months after halachic nisuin until they perform nisuin. During that period of time, if the Kohen is sending her truma to her home, she's going to share it with her family, and her family's not entitled to eat truma, and that's what we're fearful of. The other possibility, which the Amora brings, is that a problem of simpon, which is that if there's something wrong with this woman when the nisuin come to be effectuated, then the Baal, who had kiddushin with her, is going to say, that's not what I intended for, or this is what I had kiddushin for, and it'll be kiddushei ta'ot. And if it's kiddushei ta'ot, that means retroactively the kiddushin was not effective, and this woman was not entitled to truma, and therefore she would be a zarah that was eating truma. To avoid that problem, we say, after nisuin, we don't have that issue anymore, because the nisuin is an acceptance of the woman as she is, and there's no longer he can say that I didn't know, or there was a ta'ot. He had the time to check it out, to figure it out, and now that he is clearly accepting the woman for the way she is and has bia with her, that's in a full acceptance of the woman. It's not going to be a kedushei ta'ot anymore, and therefore we assume at that point in time she's entitled to truma. And for the first amora, the reason is because now she lives with her husband, and therefore she's not going to share with her family because she's living with her husband. So the Gemara over here is saying that if she was nisua to the first brother who's deceased now, then she was already entitled to truma fully, both midoraita and midorabanan. And because of that, when the brother who is performing a levirate marriage steps into the shoes of his brother, he entitles her to anything that the first husband would have entitled her to, and that includes truma. And that includes anything that's written in the parsha, and that includes anything that's not written in the parsha, as long as it's on par with the items that the first husband was responsible or chayav for. So too, the second brother will be in that same boat. With regards to Erusin, we just saw that midoraita she's entitled to truma, but midorabanan she's not entitled to truma. And that's the question here between Rav and Shmuel. Rav says that the biyah is so good at consummating this yibum, this levirate marriage, that she's not only entitled to everything that a normal wife would be entitled to, it completes the nisuin. This is the nisuin, it's a full-fledged nisuin now, and she's now entitled to her truma, even though that wasn't true of her original husband, but the new husband, the biyah, takes over that finish line and consummates the marriage, and therefore she's entitled to truma. Shmuel says, if you did a proper biyah, that would be the case. But he didn't do a proper biyah. There's some biyah here that was subpar or suboptimal in some way, and therefore you can only empower her to the things that are written in the parsha, or things that are similar to that which is written in the parsha, which means things where the husband would have entitled her to, so to the yabam can entitle her to that. Since the husband did not entitle her to truma, the Yavam cannot entitle her to truma until he performs proper nisuin with her. And this suboptimal nisuin will not entitle her to truma. And that's the way that the Gemara explains here, the machloket between them, which is that by nisuin, everybody agrees she's entitled to truma. Where they argue about is min erusin. Rav amar ochelet. Rav says when it comes to erusin, she eats it. Da Rabbi Rachmana biyat shogeg kemezid. The Torah included a biyat b'shogeg like a mezid. Any type of biyah works. Now, as the Meiri points out over here, it's not that the Mezid is more obvious than Shogeg, because Mezid is also a suboptimal or subpar biyah, as we saw in the Mishnah, that Mezid means that Rashi says, L'shem Znut, below L'shem Mitzvah. Mezid is not any more obvious than Shogeg. When it says Shogeg and Mezid, it just means both of them. It doesn't mean Shogeg like Mezid, it means Shogeg and Mezid. They're both included from the Reboy that we saw in the Pasuk, Yivama Yivoala, Doesn't matter how the biyah is performed, it is successful at acquiring this woman, this yivama. And so that's what Rav says. The Torah permitted or empowered such a biyah. And once it did that, it made it on par with the proper or any type of biyah that would have otherwise acquired the yivama. Shmuel Amar, ki Rabbi Rachmana lo ukmei b'makom bal. That type of yibum, or that type of biyah, is only powerful enough to put him on par with the original husband, meaning to replace his brother when he steps into the levirate marriage. La lume b'bal lo. But to give more rights to the woman than she had under her previous husband, that type of biyah is not included. It's just to give what's written in the parsha, or anything that's similar to what's written in the parsha, which means something on par with that the husband had entitled her to. Baz the Shmuel Tamei, and Shmuel's the Shitato, the Amar Rav Nachman, Amar Shmuel, Kosha Baal Machil, Yabam Machil. Whatever the husband could have entitled his wife to, so too the Yabam, his brother, performing the levirate marriage, can entitle his wife to. Choshena Baal Machil, Yabam Eino Machil. Whatever the husband did not entitle the woman to, then the Yabam can't entitle her to either. And here we're obviously talking about Achilat Truma, because it's talking about Machil. And obviously we're speaking about a subpar biyah, as Rashi says, davka b'biyah belodat, kinyan. So obviously you're talking about a biyah that is a suboptimal biyah, about b'biyah gemura, if he does a full-fledged biyah with her, ishto gemurahi. That we already also learned from the pasuk, that is, she becomes aita lo li'isha, that she becomes his wife, fully and full-fledged manner. And in that way, she is entitled to anything that a regular woman in a marriage or nisuin would be entitled to. And therefore she would be ochelet afilu l'shmuel. Even according to Shmuel, she would get or be entitled to truma. The only question here is where it was performed in a subpar or suboptimal manner. Now, the Gemara is going to ask a question in a second, but we have to take a step back and take a big picture here, because the Balei Tosafot limit the machloket over here between Shmuav and Shmuel. And Tosafot says, first of all, Kevan de biyat shogeg lo kani ba'ama. Since a biyat shogeg is not effective in other situations, svaruhu de l'rabia le dvarim afushrim b'parsha behedya. Therefore, Shmuel believes that logically it should only entitle the woman to things that are written in the parsha. Aval b'truma lo achla yedei biyat grua, v'lo yorsha, v'lo mitamela, v'lo mefer nedereh, dainu l'lumi bebal. All those are a step up from what the husband had, because none of these are things that are entitled from the point of Erusin. We saw this earlier in the Gemara a number of times, that when the Nisuin extends the Baal's connection to the wife so that it obligates him to become Tamei for her if he's a Kohen in order to bury her, he has the right to be Mefer Nidareah independent of her father. He has the entitlement to be Yoresh, to inherit her. None of that's true at the point of Erusin. And so just like Truma changes from the time of Erusin to Nisuin, so too all these items change between Erusin and Nisuin, and Shmuel says that's giving the Yabam more power than the Baal. So none of those will work with a Biyah Grua, as we noted here. But if there was already Nisuin with the original husband, or the Yabam himself performed a proper Yibum, and there was Nisuin here, Zakai Bikulu, then all of these are true. Dolabi Alaluk maybe Makom Baal. Because, first of all, he's now just taking on the rights that his brother already had from the level of Nisuin. And if he did the biyah properly, he's already executed nisuin, and therefore she is a full-fledged wife, and all those items that come along with it would be true. So now, the Tosafot clarifies that that's only true with a biyah grua. But what's defined as a biyah grua? You know, the Balei Tosafot said, that's a biyah shogeg, biyah mezid. Those are problematic biyot. But now Tosafot says, aval behara, dekanyinami be'alma, heara, which we just spoke about in yesterday's daf, which is a partial penetration by the individual of the woman, that's considered or classified as a full-fledged biyah for all other areas of halacha. Over there, biyahi l'chol davar lo pligiba. Rav and Shmuel wouldn't argue about that. That's as good as a regular biyah. Hara, biyah gmura are all the same thing. They would be successful at doing, creating nisuin, and you would not have this machlok between Rav and Shmuel. So Tosafot says, despite the fact that the Gemara here says this on the part of the Mishnah, it says, Echad ha-me'arev, Echad ha-gomer, kana, despite the fact that it's said on that piece of the Mishnah, it's not referencing to that piece of the Mishnah. Harai and Gemar Biyah are all the same, and those are good, functional, proper biyot. It's going back to what was ahead of it before that in the Mishnah, which was Mezid, Shogeg, Ones, all of those problematic biyot that were mentioned before, those biyot are suboptimal, subpar, And there is where you have the machlok between Rab and Shmuel. And the reason that the Gemara brought it on this part of the Mishnah, the last piece there, is because it says kana. And the word kana is going back on the entire first half of the Mishnah. And so it's commenting on that word kana, how much, but not specifically about the last case that was mentioned, which is Echad HaMa'arev, Echad HaGomer. And then that way Tosfot says two things here that are important. One is that a biyah grua only refers to shogeg, mezid, and all those biyot that are similar to it, not to a biyah, which is he'ara, or a biyah gemura, because those are full-fledged biyot. Number two is, the machlok between Rab and Shmuel here is about truma, but it's also about anything else that changes from the point of erusin to the point of nisuin. That's Tosfot's shita, and that's the shita of many of the Rishonim, the Ramban, the Rashba, the Ritva. Many of the Rishonim believe like the Balei Tosafot. The Rif, the Rambam, and seemingly Rashi might be also in this shita, have a different view. First of all, they think that it has application even to Echad HaMa'areh v'Echad HaGomer, and they likely are relying on the Yerushalmi, which the Tosafot here now quotes later on, the Yerushalmi, which has a Machloket Amoraim, and one of the Amoraim there says that the Machloket Rav and Shmuel refers to Hara and Biyag Mura. And therefore, they believe that the Machloket between Rav and Shmuel is not only about Shogeg and Mezid, it's about Hara, also, which is a subpar or suboptimal biyah according to them. Doruch Ne'er points out that maybe the Rif is the Shitato, kind of on yesterday's daf. There are a number of Rishonim that point out, like the Rif and the Ran and others, that indicate that Ha'ara is a subpar type of biyah, and it will only be successful at creating Erusin in conjunction with another form of Kinyan. So that would indicate that it is not a full-fledged type of Kinyan. And similarly over here, the Rif is consistent with that opinion in saying that it is a subpar form of Kinyan. That's number one. Number two, according to the Rambam, it's only about the issue of Truma that they are arguing. The other items are all part and parcel of the Kinyan Biyah. Truma is the one exceptional case where the Machloket Rav and Shmuel stands, whereas the Balei Tosafot suggested that that's just representative of other items that change between Erusin to Nisuin, including Hafarat Nedarim, Betameila, Yerusha, all those things are the same or have the same din as Truma, and Rav and Shmuel would argue about them. Whereas again, the Rif and the Rambam would say that the Kinyan is successful with the exception of Truma. And despite the language of the Yerushalmi, which seems to favor the Rif and the Rambam, the Lashon of our Gemara in explaining Rav seems to favor the Balei Tosafot, where it says, Ramar Ochelet Ha Rabbi Rachmana Biat Shogeg Kemezid. Mentions Shogeg Mezid, doesn't mention Hara. And so that seems to indicate that the issue that we're speaking about is subpar, suboptimal biot that are like shogeg mezid, not the problem of me'areh, which according to the Balei Tosafot is equal to or on par with a gemar biyah and has no deficit with regards to it at all. Leitevei, now the gemar challenges Shmuel's position from a breita. Bat Yisrael pikechet, shenita sra the kohen pikech. There's a regular marriage, a halachic engagement of a rusin between a Bat Yisrael and a Kohen, which Min HaTorah would entitle her to Truma, but because of the Gzerot the Rabbanan that we spoke about before, she won't be entitled to that Truma until she has Nisuin. Lo yispik l'konsa, but he was not successful at consummating the marriage, ad shenit charesh, until he became a charesh, which according to the Gemara, a charesh of this type is someone who has lost their hearing and ability to speak. And in many cases, the Gemara sees this as being synonymous with someone who is an enu bardat. He's no longer a fully functioning individual. And because of that, his actions do not take on tokef midoraita, do not take on a standing min haTorah. And that means, had this individual been a cheresh before the kiddushin or the erusin took place, he would not be able to create either erusin or kiddushin with this woman min haTorah. The Rabbanan entitled such a cheresh and a chereshet to have marriages, even though kinyanim are not effective midoraita, there is a kinyan midorabanan. But a kinyan midorabanan is not going to help you to eat truma. So over here, since the kiddushin was already done midoraita, properly, they were both pikchim, they were both of sound mind when that happened. But when it comes to the consummation of the marriage nisuin, the kohen already is not necessarily of sound mind. Eino chelet, she's not entitled to eat the truma. Mate, v'nafla lifnei yabam, cheresh, if he passes away, this brother that's nitcharesh, and she falls to a yabam who's a cheresh, who's on the same standing or same mental state as his brother who is deceased, ochelet. If he is miyabemer, she can eat truma. Ubeze yafe koach yabam mikoach abal. For this you see that the yabam has more strength or more power than that of the husband. So now, bishlama the Rav Vnecha. According to Rav, this works very well. Because according to Rav, there is a possibility that the Abam, even in a subpar situation, can be on a greater level or a higher level than the Baal. He can entitle this woman to Truma with a subpar Bi'ah, like Shogeg or Mezid, even though the husband hadn't entitled her to that. And even though technically the Nisuin of the Cheresh should have been enough to bring her over the finish line and entitle her to Truma, nevertheless, we're going to see in the upcoming Gemara that the Gemara was Gozer, Nisuei Cheresh, Atu Kedushei Cheresh, because the Kedushin here, in our case, were Deoraita, because he wasn't a Cheresh then. But had he been a Cheresh, it would have been a problem. So therefore, the Chachamim were Gozer, that the Nisuin of the Cheresh are not effective, so nobody makes the mistake to think that a Kedushin of a Cheresh are effective. Nevertheless, if he passes away, and she falls to a brother who is a Cheresh, and he performs Yibum with her, that is successful to bring her across the finish line and entitle her to Truma. And the Biyah of a Cheresh is no different than the Biyat Shogeg or Biyat Mezid. I mean, it's a suboptimal Biyah, either because the Biyah is performed for the wrong reasons, Shogeg or Mezid, or over here because it's being performed by an Inobardat, by a Cheresh, and therefore they're on the same level. And you see from here that the Yabam is able to entitle the woman to something that the Baal could not entitle her to, which sounds exactly like what Rav suggested. And the Baal Yatosavot point out that even though the Nisuin over here, when they're completed by the Abam and he's a Cheresh, why don't we worry about all the Gzerot Chachamim that do not entitle her to Truma? And that is because, it also points out here, Rashi later on in Diri Matkil Kasavar and the Rashba also note that there's nothing to worry about anymore. If you worry about her giving the food to her family, she's now has Nisuin with this individual. She's not living with family. If you're worried about Simpon, maybe you'll find something wrong with the woman and therefore it'll be Kedushei Ta'ot Limafreya. We don't worry about that because this individual is now a Cheresh. He's not necessarily a Bardat, and he doesn't mind or he doesn't worry about these things. What's the possibility that he will become of sound mind again or thinks he will be cured and therefore he might come to find something that's wrong with her and make it into Kedushei Ta'ot? Because it's a davar she'eno shchiach. It's not something that is common. And the Chachamim were not gozer in times or issues that are not commonplace. So the fact that either you'd be cured or be cured and find something wrong with her, since that's a rarity, they were not gozer. And that's why she's entitled to Truma, despite the takanot of Simpon and giving to her family, because both of those fall away with the Ibum of the Cheresh. So again, this is very supportive of Rav's position or contention. Now, Lishmol, Kasha. But for Shmuel, it's problematic, this Braita, because it makes it sound like the Yabam can exceed the rights of the Baal, even with a suboptimal Biyah. So Amar Lecha Shmuel, Emahachi. You should reread the Braita in the following manner. It doesn't necessarily mean it's Chasuri Metzora, but you should understand it in this way. Lohi speak the Konsa, Achi Nitcharesh. If he was Nitcharesh before he had the opportunity to consummate the marriage, before Nisuin, she's not entitled to Truma, because as we said before, there goes there, Nisuin, Atu, Erusin, and she's not entitled to it. Kanas, v'achakach nitcharesh, if he completed or consummated the marriage, and then was not of sound mind, ochelet, she's entitled to eat Truma with her husband, because she completed the Erusin and consummated her marriage of Nisuin before he turned into a cheresh, therefore she was entitled to Truma, and now when her husband passes away, and if she's up for the levirate marriage, that Yabam can entitle or empower her to the same level as the husband. And since she was entitled to Truma from before that, she will continue to be entitled to Truma through the Yibum. But then what are you going to do with the last statement of the Braita, Uma Bezo, that this is the point at which the Yabam is more powerful than the Baal? That is explained like this. The Ilu Baal, Cheresh, Mi'ikara, Lo Ochelet. Had the Cheresh originally done a Biyah, when he was already a Cheresh, it would not be successful. Bilu Yabam Cheresh, Miikara, Miabeimota. He has Biyah with her, Achla, she's able to eat. Meaning that the Yabam is stronger in the fact that even though his Biyah took place after he was a Cheresh, he still entitles her to Truma. Whereas the husband could only entitle her to Truma if he became a Cheresh after he consummated the marriage. Had he had Biyah after he was already a Cheresh, he would not entitle her to Truma. And that's how the Yabam is stronger than the husband, because the Yabam already as a Cheresh, his Biyah is successful, whereas the husband's Biyah is only successful to grant her Truma in Nisuin if it's done before he became a Cheresh, not after he became a Cheresh. So now that's the first version of this Gemara. And now we have an Ika Damre. Mina Erusim Devei Akol Lo Achla. According to this version, everybody agrees that from the Erusin, the woman is not entitled to eat if the Yabam performs a subpar bia with her, then the Yabam cannot exceed the rights of the husband. And Rav and Shmuel agree that only those things that are written in the Parsha is she entitled to. Because she wasn't entitled to Truma before the husband passed away. And therefore, the Yabam can't empower her to that if he doesn't perform proper Nisuin with her, have a proper bia. Subpar bia will leave her in the same position she was before, not able to eat Truma. Keep lige min Nisuin. There are machloket is when she already was in Nisua, she already consummated the marriage, and Rav Amar Ochelet, Dava Achla Miikora. She can continue to eat now with this subpar bia, because she ate from the outset. Her husband already entitled her to Truma, and therefore just this subpar bia puts him on the same level as the husband, and if that's the case, she's entitled to eat Truma at that point in time. Shmuel Amar, Eino Achelet, that she's not entitled to eat Truma, because Ki Rabbi Rachmana Biat Shogei Kemezid, the Dvarim Amurim Beparsha, the only things that are included in a Biat Shogei Kemezid, these subpar Biot, are for things that are explicit in the Parsha. But for other things, that would not be the case. According to this version, everybody agrees by Erusin that the Yabam cannot bestow rights that the Baal didn't already have, and therefore Truma cannot be eaten because that would be exceeding the rights that the Baal had or had granted to this woman. With regards to Nisuin, then, Shmuel believes that a Bia Grua is only included for the things explicitly written in the Parsha. It doesn't mean things that are similar to that. It means only for those things that are written in the Parsha, not because it's the Yabam is stepping into the shoes of the Baal, but because the Torah, when it included Bia Grua, it did it for those things that are written in the Parsha, including the Parsha. Rav says, a Bia Grua, once the Torah tells you that it's successful at including or granting the rights that are mentioned in the Parsha, it is grants everything that is written in the Parsha, and all things that are not written in the Parsha as well. But in this version, Rav says that the Bia Grua does not make the Abba more powerful than the Baal. It just puts him on par with him. But it grants him all the rights that the Baal had. And since the Baal already had completed Nisuin, that means that she's a full-fledged wife to this individual. The Abba can replicate that even through a Bia Grua. And therefore, according to Rav, she's entitled to eat Truma like she was under the auspices of the Baal. According to Shmuel, she's not entitled to Truma, because even though under the auspices of the Baal she was, the Bia Grua only entitles her to things that are explicit in the Parsha. Now the Gemara says, "V'amar Rav Nachman Rav Shmuel, kol she'Baal ma'achil, Yabam ma'achil." Whatever the Baal can grant, the Yabam can grant. If that's the case, then why can't over here the Yabam grant this woman what the Baal already granted her? So Ema, you have to reread or reword that to say, "Kol biyah she'Baal ma'achil ba." Any biyah which would be successful as consummation of a nisuah, then Yabam ma'achil ba. That type of biyah, which is a proper full-fledged biyah, will entitle the woman to the same rights that she had under her husband, under the Yabam. Kol biyah she'ena Baal ma'achil ba, any biyah that's suboptimal, which would not work for the Baal, any Yabam ma'achil ba, then the Yabam can't use that same biyah and entitle her to the Truma. So even though the Baal did a proper biyah and did entitle to her, since the Yabam's using a subpar biyah, which according to the husband would also have been problematic had he used such a biyah, so the Yabam can't grant rights to this woman because he used a subpar biyah. Meitave, once again, that same brayta that we had before, but this time around, the brayta is going to be a problem both for Rav and for Shmuel. Bat Yisrael pikechet, shnitasa le kohen. Bat Yisrael, who was a sound mind, got engaged to a kohen pikeach, who was also of sound mind. Velo yispik le konsad shnitcharesh. And then they were not successful at consummating the marriage before he became a cheresh, and therefore he was no longer a bardat. So Nisuin took place after he was not a bardat, and then eno achelet, she's not entitled to eat. Mate, if he passes away, yabam, then he falls to Yabam, who's a cheresh, who's also not a bardat, ochelet. He can create the consummation of the marriage, the nisuin. And in this way, the Yabam has more power than the Baal. The Baal was a cheresh, could not entitle his wife to Truma with nisuin as a cheresh. That the Yabam, performing Yibom as a cheresh, can entitle this woman to Truma. Now, Rav is going to have a problem with that too, because Rav just said, a subpar bia only puts him on par with the Baal. Doesn't put him in more rights than the Baal. But he'll answer that, the Rav, mitaretz kitaretz miikora. He'll answer the same way we answered for Shmuel in the first version of this machloket. Over there we answered for Shmuel that the case here really was a case where the consummation and the nisuin took place, and then he became a cheresh. In that case, then when the Yabam comes and does the Yibum, a subpar bia will entitle her to Truma, because it's just continuing what the Baal was, it's putting him on the same level as the Baal. And even though the Baal could not do that as a cheresh, the Yabam can do that as a cheresh. That's how we explain the Braita according to Rav, which is the way Shmuel explained it in the previous version. Elo Shmuel, kasha for Shmuel, it's problematic, who says that a subpar biyah does not help by an arusa. And even by an iswa, it only titles to you what's in the parsha. It doesn't entitle you to Shuma. He can't fit into this Braita at all. There's no time that Shmuel thinks that you're going to get the Yabam to grant you the rights of Shuma with a subpar biyah, which is a biyah v'cheresh, is a subpar biyah, and yet the Braita is saying it's entitling her to Shuma, and therefore kasha. That's a serious question or a problem for Shmuel. Now, the Gemara does not say to Yufta over here, because even according to Rav, the Braita has to be amended to fit his position. So if you already tell me that the Braita is not a good Braita, then to say it's a Tiyufta and Shmuel is difficult, and that's why the Gemara leaves it as a kasha and not as a Tiyufta. And now the Gemara continues along the same topic, brings a Braita, Tamar Rabbanan, Bat Yisrael Pikechet, you have a woman who is a Yisraelite, who is of sound mind, Shnita Asal, the Kohen Pikech, that got engaged halachically to a Kohen, who was also of sound mind, Belis, Pik Lukonsa, Achnit Charesh. Before they consummated the marriage, before they reached the point of Nisuin, he became a Cheresh, therefore was classified as an individual who wasn't a Bardat. Eino Ochelet. She doesn't have the right to eat Truma, even though technically, as we saw before, that Mina Torah, the woman can eat Truma once she is Erusin, because that's classified as Kinyan Kaspo. Nevertheless, the Takanat Chachamim was that only after the point of Nisuin. And over here, the Nisuin is problematic because he's not a Bardat when it happens. On the other hand, if the Nisuin goes through while he's a Cheresh, not a Bardat, and then Nolad Ben, and then she has a child from this Kohen, and the son that is born is obviously a Kohen, and entitles her to eat Truma, and therefore Ochelet Truma. Meta Ben, if the son passes away, Rabbi Natan Omer Ochelet, she continues to eat in the schut of this child that was born and now has passed away. Now, in a normal situation, a Yisraelite, had she been married to a Kohen, and had a child, the child would entitle her to Truma. The child passed away, she'd still be entitled to Truma because of the husband. But in this case, the husband is problematic because he's not a Berber Dat, he is a Cheresh. And therefore, Rabbi Natan says that even though he's a Cheresh, once she starts to eat Truma because of the son, she can continue to eat it based on the husband. That she doesn't get to do that. She doesn't have an entitlement. Once the son passes away, she's no longer entitled to Truma. My time with Rabbi Natan. What's the reasoning behind Rabbi Natan's position? Since she already started to eat Truma, we don't take it away from her, that possibility of eating Truma. Abaye says to Rabbah, well, a Bat Yisrael who marries a Kohen is therefore entitled to eat Truma. And then her husband passes away. Since she already started to eat Truma, she should continue to be entitled to eat Truma. That's not true. That once the person that entitles the woman to eat Truma has passed away, she's no longer entitled to eat Truma. Came into Mitle, Pakale Kedushate Mina. That once the husband passes away, she loses her status. Hachanami, so too over here in our case, came into Mitle, the son passed away, Paka Kedushate Mina. She's lost the right to eat Truma. And so just like by a Yisraelite, if she's married to a Kohen and eats Truma and her husband passed away, she's no longer entitled to Truma. So too, in this instance, where the child entitled her to Truma, when the child passes away, it's not entitled to eat Truma. Ela Amar Rav Yosef, so Rav Yosef, by his other Rebbe, offers an alternative explanation. Kasava Rabbi Natan, Nisue Cheresh Machilin B'Truma, Velo Gazrina Nisue Cheresh Atu Kedushe Cheresh. So the Nisuin, as we said before, is the trigger for allowing the woman to eat Truma. The problem in the Nisuin over here is that he's a Cheresh. Now, technically, the Cheresh, when he marries and has a Nisuin, it should make it that she is entitled to Truma. Nevertheless, the Chachamim, as we're going to see in a second, were gozer that Nisuei Cheresh, if we allow them to be effective, then people are going to think that Kedushei Cheresh are also effective, and that's not true. Because in our situation, our scenario over here, the Kedushin were created with a Pikeach and a Pikechet, which means that they were both of sound mind. And the Kedushin are affected Midoraita, and Midoraita, she's entitled to Truma. There's a Takanat Rabbanan that says she can't eat until Nisuin. So then, once we hit Nisuin, we would have let her eat the Truma, because it's only a Takanat Rabbanan, and as we noted before, there's nothing to worry about anymore. In terms of her being in her father's house, she's no longer there, she's now with this husband. And in terms of Simpon, him finding something that's going to be untoward, he's not necessarily a Bardat, or if he becomes a Bekech again, the likelihood that he finds something is unusual, and therefore we're not going to preclude her from eating Truma. That should have been the way that we looked at it, and therefore it would have been that she, when had Nisuin with this Kohen, that was a Cheresh, should have facilitated her ability to eat Truma. The reason we don't say that is because the Chachamim say, if we allow that to happen, people are going to say, well, Nisuin with the Cheresh is fine, then Kedushin with the Cheresh are fine. And that's not true. As we said before, the Kedushin with the Cheresh are only Kedushin Derabanan. That's the case. She's not entitled to eat Truma, and she doesn't have Kedushin Doraita, and she's not allowed then to have all the trappings of a married woman that would be true of one who marries a Kohen if they were both Bardat. So that's why over here the Chachamim say that the Nisuin fail, in order that you don't get mixed up and think that the Kedushin can work. Rabbi Natan says, we're not gozer. Lo gazrin nisui cheresh atu kedushei cheresh. Rabbi Natan disagrees with the Chachamim and says that the Nisuin go through, and I'm not gozer the Nisuin atu the Kedushin. So I'm like, Abaye now challenges his other Rebbe, Rabbi Yosef, Ihachi no da ben lomali. Then why in the case of the Breita do we need a child to be born in order to have Rabbi Natan argue? Rabbi Natan argues irrespective of whether it's a child. If the woman goes through Nisuin, that would entitle her to eat Truma according to Rabbi Natan, according to your version of this. And why do we need a son to be born? The Liflog, Rabbi Natan, Alayu Bereisha. Why does he only argue about when the son is born? He should argue on the first case in the Breita, where they just had plain Nisuin, and it says there that she's not entitled to eat. So, Shaviklu l'Rabbanan Adim Saime Miltayu. And Ochanami, Rabbi Natan argues on the Chachamim on both positions. And he just waited for them to finish what they had to say. And then he noted his position, which is that he argues on both. Argues on the situation where there was a son born and then passed away, she still is entitled to eat Truma. Even a bigger chiddush is that if he has Nisuin with her, that in itself is enough to allow her to eat Truma. Ihochi, if that's the case, that he waited until the Chachamim finished, litnei meita ben eina ochelet, Rabbi Natan Omer, ochelet. The language of the Breita does not indicate that he's arguing on the remainder of the Breita because of the way that it is structured. It says, though, no, not ben, ochelet. Meita ben, Rabbi Natan Omer, ochelet. Chachamim Aramim, eno ochelet. Why do you have to bring the position of the Chachamim at the end of eno ochelet if the Chachamim are speaking the Reisha and they're continuing their position and then Rabbi Natan comes to argue? All the Chachamim's position should have been rendered first and then only then Rabbi Natan's position. And the way we have the Breita, it has the Reisha, then it has Rabbi Natan's position and then the Chachamim's position. Makes it sound like they're not a continuation of the Reisha. And so the rabbi is challenging it based on that language. It should have said in the Breita, litnei meita ben eino ochelet, which would have been the continuation of the Chachamim's position, and then finally Rabbi Natan Omer ochelet, going back on both the Reisha and the Seifa, kasha. That is a difficulty with Rabbi Yosef's explanation of Rabbi Natan's position. Now the Gemara continues, v'chein haba achat mikol arayot. So here at the end of the Mishnah it says that a woman who has biyah, no matter how the biyah took place with one of the arayot in the Torah, that renders her a zonah and psula the kuhuna. So Rav Amram says, this we learned from Rav Sheshit, and he showed us a proof to his position from our Mishnah. He enlightened us, he opened up our eyes to this from our Mishnah over here. Which is probably a play on words, because Rav Sheshit himself was blind, and therefore it was a Sagi Nahor, and he enlightened us, or lightened our eyes, to this matter. I mean, he was able to teach us something and enlighten us, even though he himself was unable to see. Eshet Yisrael shenensa, a woman, a married woman, who was raped, avu pishu muter de bala, even though she can return to her husband, psula de kuhuna, she's still disqualified from the kuhuna. Now, that doesn't matter, because she's in a marriage right now, but if the marriage that she's currently in dissolves, not through a divorce, because divorce also would make her psula de kuhuna, it wouldn't matter what her status was before. But if her husband passes away and she's widowed, then she will not be allowed to marry a Kohen because of the fact of the rape that took place while she was married. Now that rape didn't preclude her from going back to her husband, but it does render her a shem zonah, which is something that would disqualify her from marrying a Kohen. Because, as we learned in the Parshia of Sota, it says, v'hi lo nitpasa, that she wasn't forced, then she's asura. Which means, ha nitpasa, if she was forced or compelled to this situation, then she's muteret, she's allowed to go back to her husband. And obviously that's the case here. It's Nesu Yisrael Shenensa. She's muteret to return to her husband because it was against her will. It wasn't something that she did. It's not something she participated in willingly. And therefore, she is allowed to return to her husband. But nevertheless, despite that fact, she's psula de kuhuna. But Tana Tuna, in our Tana, says this because the Mishnah says v'chein habal achat mikol arayot amarot b'Torah. Second half of the Mishnah begins with the term v'chein. V'chein means that similar to that which was mentioned beforehand. Now, until now, what we discussed was the different forms of biyah that take place. And then it says v'chein habal achat mikol arayot shebetorah. So then, what is the v'chein coming to teach you? What is the equation that says whatever we knew from Yevama, now we're going to also apply to this situation, which says in the Mishnah, "Chena bal achat mikol areyot shvetorah pasulot kegon almanah lekohen gadol gushav chutzla lechalutza lekohen hajot mamzer nitinah liyisrael bat yisrael mamzer natinim pasla." That ruins her standing for the kuna. Below chilek ben biyala biyan. There's no distinction between the biyot. So what is the v'chein coming to say that's true of the resha of the Mishnah? It's also true in the seifa of the Mishnah. My lav, the beginning of the Mishnah is lo shna b'shogeg, lo shna b'mezid, lo shna bones, lo shna b'ratzon. That all of these biyot have the same outcome. And so the same thing will be true in the seifa of the Mishnah. No matter what type of biyah that took place, the outcome will be the same. And what is the outcome in the second half of the Mishnah? Is that pasla, that she is rendered problematic as a zona for the kahuna. So if that's the case, then we have in the list in the first half of the Mishnah, shogeg mezid, which are women who maybe participated willingly in an extramarital affair, but also as ones. It has a case of someone who was not, who was forced into a position. We said before in the Mishnah that the forcing allows the yibum to go through, even though it's a biyah that's problematic. Nevertheless, it allows for the yibum to take place because of the way the Torah includes it. And then if you say b'chein, that says that even bones, even if the woman was compelled or forced, raped, she nevertheless is disqualified from the kuhuna, because that's what it says b'chein. The second half of the Mishnah says that is what was true in the first half of the Mishnah is true in the second half of the Mishnah, and that's posla l'kuhuna. Even in a situation where she was raped, muteret l'bala, she's still disqualified for the kuhuna. K'tani psala. So it says lo shna bones, lo b'shav v'ratzon. Doesn't matter if it was a consensual extramarital affair or it was a rape. Still is psula the kuhuna. Gemara says lo, my b'chein. That's going on harara. That's going on the type of bi'ah that is considered to be a bi'ah that is problematic. And we saw in the beginning of the Mishnah that harara, a small penetration is enough to render the yibum to make it a bi'ah that is subpar, but it still renders it as yibum. So Gemara says harara deman, which harara are you learning from here? Ilema darayot. If you're talking about harara darayot, the memra darayot, yalfeinan mi yivama. So that's to tell me that yivama is the core limud about harara. And then we learn that to arayot. It's just the opposite. Adrabah. Yivama yalfeinan mi arayot. We found that arayot, the word harara, appears by the arayot. And then we learn from that through a hekesh and a gzer shavah that it also applies to yibum. So it's the opposite way around. That can't be the explanation. The ikar hara b'arayot k'tiv. Because the main source for hara comes out of arayot, and then we apply it to yivama. But the fact that it says, by nida, ish, sheishkavet isha dava, v'gila, tevratayet, mikora, hara. And then we saw the hekesh between all the arayot from the summary pasuk, mikikol asher asem, mikola devot, eile, v'nechritu, anifashot, osot, hukshu kol arayot kulam nida, ma nida b'hara, afko b'hara. And that was the source for it. So it's just the opposite of what you're suggesting over here. So that can't be the v'chein over here. Elamai v'chein, ashalo kedarka, darayot. It's to come to teach you that even a bi'ah ashalo kedarka is impactful in terms of yivama, and is also impactful in terms of arayot. Once again here, adarabah, ikar mishkevei isha barayot tiv. The plurality of mishkevei isha that teaches you both kedarka and ashalo kedarka work is found by Arayot. By Shaloka Darka, the source is Ve'etzachar v'tshishkav mishkevei isha. And once again, there's the Hekesh of Arayot. And that since it's written in the Arayot, that's the core parshia from which it's learned. It's not from Yivama that it's learned to Arayot. It's the other way around. It's from Arayot that it's taught to Yivama. If that's the case, once again, the Chain goes back to be a proof to what Rav Sheshet said, that the Chain must be coming to teach us what Rav Sheshet had said, and not these other items. Comes to teach you that Shaloka Darka has impact in issues that are Chayve Lavin. Rashi over here says, they don't have Mishkeve Isha written with them. And we don't need to learn from Yivama to the Chayve Lavin with regards to Ha'ara, because that we can learn now from Gezer Shava Kicha Kicha. Now these lavin are not found in the Parshiot Arayot, so not covered by the Hekesh of all the Arayot together. So they don't have Heara, they don't have Shaloka Darka, but we can learn Heara from Kicha Kicha, the Gezer Shava that we saw in the previous two Dapim. Tosfot is bothered by that statement of Rashi, because if Kicha Kicha, that Gezer Shava from Arayot, is sufficient grounds to learn Heara from Arayot, then you should also be able to learn Shaloka Darka from the Arayot. If that's the case, then the Chayvei Lavin Shel Kuhuna should not need the limud from Yivama. And therefore, the Baal Yitosef will believe that the Lavin that we're speaking about here are not the Lavin of Kuhuna, but rather other Chayvei Lavin that don't have to do with the Kuhuna, because in those situations, there's no kicha that is written. And therefore, Shaloka Darkan is learned from Exer Shaba of Bia Mi Yivama. And the same way that a Yivama is Niknek Bihara from the Exer Shaba Bia Bia, so too, the Bia Bia, Lo Yavo Mamzer Bekal Hashem, Lo Yavo Amoni Moavi Bekal Hashem, all of those Yavo or Bia comes to teach you Exer Shaba similar to Yivama, that Shaloka Darka has impact even by these Arayot as well, or these Chiyuvei Lavin that are going to make the woman Psula Le Kehuna, even if it's done Shalo Kedarka. Now, as way of introduction for the next part, the Sukim by the Sota say, Ish Ish Ki Tiste Ishto, Mala Bo Mal, V'shchab Ishota Shichvat Zera Ne'ala Me'na Isha, V'nister Rabi Nitma'a, V'enein Ba, V'hi Lo Nitpasa. From that Pasuk, we've already noted that Hi Lo Nitpasa means that she wasn't compelled. She wasn't Zinta Be'ones. She wasn't raped, but rather Biratzon. She was a willing participant. And also the classification Vehi Nitma'a, she became Tmeya. So those two things teach us one din is that a woman who willingly participates in an extramarital affair, then she's Hi Nitma'a. She becomes Tmeya and becomes a surah the Bala, becomes restricted for her husband. On the other hand, we also learn from Hilo Nitpasa that that's not true with regards to a woman who was raped. She's not rendered a surah the bala, and she could return to her husband. The question of hinitma'a is what Rav Sheshet just addressed, which was that even if she is not a surah the bala, she still has some form of either nitma'a, or she's classified as a zona, and because of that, she cannot marry a kohen after the passing of her husband. Now, with regards to her husband himself, if she has an extramarital affair, she's restricted from returning to her husband, either because of a hinit me'ah that is mentioned here in the Parshat Sota, because it says by the Parshia of a grusha, a divorcee, lo yuchal bala rishon asher shachal ashuv lekachtach rei sher hu tam'ah, that after she has become defiled, it's improper for her husband to take her back. And that is when the woman marries another person in the interim, the original husband can't take this woman back because of hu tam'ah, or because of her classification as a zonah, which Tosaf Baal Yitosef would suggest to be restricts her even on her husband, as long as she doesn't have the dispensation of Hidlo Nitpasa. So for one of those two reasons, the husband is restricted from returning his wife after she willingly engages in an extramarital affair, either because she's deemed a zona, or because she is Nitme'a, and we see from the Grusha that after she's Nitme'a, he cannot return her. Now, based on what we've said now, the Baal Yitosefot here and the Baal Amor says the same thing. Understand that the issue of Ones versus Ratzon is only a distinction that applies to adultery or a married woman. And that is because with regards to other Arayot, the Isur is not the Bgida, breaking of the marital ties. The problem is the inherent problem of the Kirva, of the relationship between the two parties. And therefore, the woman will be rendered a Zona, whether it happened willingly or unwillingly should be rendered a zona because the problem is inherent to their relationship or the kirva between the individuals. On the other hand, when it comes to adultery, the problem there is what we call begida. It is the woman's stia, leaving of the marriage, her rejection or rebelling against her husband that causes the problem. And therefore, there will be a distinction between whether she willingly engaged in this extramarital affair. In that instance, she will become tmeya, she'll become a zona. She'll be a surah the bala. The other hand, if she was raped, then she did not willingly rebel against her husband or break her marital ties. And therefore, she's not going to be rendered problematic. She will not be tmeya. She will be able to return to her husband. And she will not be rendered a zonah as far as her husband is concerned. The question that is being raised and what Rav Sheshet suggests is that despite the fact that she's not a zonah for her husband, she still is a zonah for the Kohanim because the Kohanim have a different rule as we're going to see in 1 second. On the other hand, the Ritva believes that by all the other Arayot as well, the woman is not rendered a Zona. But logically, the Baal Amor and the Baal Yitosefot make sense, which is that the difference between Arayot is an inherent Isur versus Eshet Ish, which is a relationship problem. Problem is caused by the relationship or the matrimonial ties that are engendered between the two parties. And therefore, the only time it should be a problem is if those ties are broken. It's only really broken if it's done willingly and it's something that's a consensual extramarital affair, not something that is done by force. Now the Gemara continues with a statement of Rabbah. I'm a Rabbah. Eshet Kohen Shenensa Bala Lokea Leha Mishum Zona. So the first thing is that there's a distinction between an Eshet Kohen. An Eshet Kohen, a wife of a Kohen, even if she is raped, is not allowed to return to her husband. And that's because of the limud by the Sota, which says the he lo nitpasa. So there, that taught us that she wasn't compelled, she wasn't forced. And in that instance, that's what makes her culpable, or that's what makes her tmeah, and unable to return to her husband. But there is also a miut in the pasuk, which is he lo nitpasa. And from that, the Gemara learns, he, in this instance, she's not rendered problematic for her husband when she was raped or forced. But there is another situation in which it is problematic, and the Gemara learns that that's with regards to Kohen. That instance, for a Kohen, the woman is restricted on the husband, irrespective of whether it was done by Ratzon, or it was done by Onus. Now, what Rabbah says then, is on top of that, if the Kohen then returns his wife and keeps her, then he's in violation of a lav, and he gets Malkot for it. And even though here this woman is Neneset, we learn from the Pasuk, Vehilo Nitpasa, that it doesn't matter with regards to a Kohen. And since she now is rendered Psula de Kuna, so that means it's a shame Zona, and because of that, she gets Malkot. Dosvot understands that this din of Rabbah is not only applicable to a Kohen, but is also applicable to Israel. And that is means that an Eshet Israel that was raped, she's also a surah to any Kohen Mishum Zona when she gets widowed. And Rabbah is not arguing on Rav Sheshet, but rather he's saying something more. He's saying what Rav Sheshet said, which is that a woman who's Neneset, whether she is a wife of a Kohen or a wife of Israel, she is now restricted to the kahuna, but he adds on top of that, loka aleha mishum zona. And then you'd also have to understand Rabbah's statement here that ba'ala loka aleha is not just her husband, but any kohen would be loka aleha because of the din of zona, and though Rabbah and Rav Sheshet are not necessarily arguing. Then the Bala Mor says that the Rabbah only said his din with regards to an Eshet Kohen. He's specifying that only an Eshet Kohen, shenan sa, is a surah the Bala and gets malkot. And therefore, he's arguing on Rav Sheshet. Rav Sheshet, who said that the woman is deemed a zonah even when she's an Eshet Yisrael, and therefore restricted the Kohen, the rabbi comes to dismiss that and say that's not true. It's only true by an Eshet Kohen. It's not true by an Eshet Yisrael. And Rav is actually arguing on the previous statement that Rav Sheshet made. Now, the Gemara says that he says she's loka, the loka mishum zonah when he takes his wife back, mishum zonah in, mishum tumah lo. It's only a problem of zonah. It's not a problem of tumah. Why doesn't he get Malkot from Tuma? As Rashi points out over here in the first parak, we said that when it says, Acharei Shehu Tama, the Rabot Sota Shinivala, Tiktiv Lo Yuchal Bala, Arishon, Lakach Total, that we mentioned before, that the husband who divorces his wife and she remarries, then he can't take her back because she's Tuma. And a Sota that acted inappropriately under her husband's auspices is considered to be Tmeya. If she's Tmeah, then there's a restriction against taking her back. So why doesn't he get Malkot for Tumah, not just for Zonah? So the Gemara says, don't worry, Rabba meant, Ema af mishum Zonah. Not only for Tumah, but also for Zonah. Meitiv Rabbi Zera. He lo nitpasa. She was not compelled. She was not forced. Asura ha nitpasa muteret. Only if she was a willing participant is she asura. Had she been compelled, if she was nenas, then she's muteret. Yesh lecha acheret, afu pishin nitpasa asura. There's another woman that even though she was forced or compelled, she was raped, then she still remains asura. Vezuzo, who is that woman? Zoeshet Kohen. And that is a wife of a Kohen. The lava ba michlal asei, asei. Now over here, so the assumption of Rabbi Zera is that the Hino Nipasa comes to teach you that a woman who is raped is not included under the restriction of lo yuchal bala rishon l'shuv l'kachtach or esher hu tama. It's written by an Eshet Yisrael and written by an Eshet Kohen. And that means that no matter what, the lav falls away when it comes to the restriction against returning her husband. So if that lav falls away, then the only thing left is the aseh, vahilo nitpasa, which is that a woman who is an Israelite, who is nanas, can return to her husband. And then the he tells you that's only true of her, not true of a Kohen. That means it's a lav haba michlal aseh. The lav haba michlal aseh is an aseh. You don't get malkot for that. So how could Rabbah claim, not only do you get malkot for zonah, you also get malkot for tumah. Tumah is precluded in this case. The answer that Rabbah gives is, Amar Rabbah, kol yu bichlal zonah. Everybody was included under the term or the rubric of zonah. That means whether it was a willing, consensual, extramarital affair, or it was a coerced or rape that took place, they are classified as a zonah. Shepiret decha katuv gabay eshet Yisrael v'hilo nitpasa asura. When it says by a wife of a regular Israeli, he lo nitpasa asura, only if she wasn't forced, is she asura, ha nitpasa muteret, if she was compelled or forced, then she's muteret, mechlal deisha kohen de kaima kaima. That means that deisha kohen remains under the same status as she was originally, meaning that the exclusion of the pasuk that comes to teach you that a eshet Yisrael has an exception to the rule, that if she was forced or she was raped, that she's not asura lebala, she doesn't have a din of tumah, that comes to exclude her from the parsha. But everybody else remains under that rubric of the parsha. That means they remain a zona, they remain bitum'ah. If that's the case, then the restriction of zona lo yikachu remains, and lo yuchal kol bala rishon lashuv lekachta achar sheir tum'ah also remains by the eshet kohen, and that's why the malkut are applicable. It's not that it's a av abba michlal asei. The asei is an exception to the rule. And if you're not accepted by that rule, you stay in the original status. And the original status is that you're a zona, or your tmeah, and that's true of an eshet kohen that was nansa, and that's why Rabba believes the husband gets malkot for taking her back, both for zona and for shetuma, even though it wasn't a consensual extramarital affair. Now the statement about kol ayu b'klal zona is somewhat difficult because there's no restriction for Yisrael to marry a zona. That restriction only applies to a kohen. And the answer is that there's some correlation clearly between the issue of tuma and zona. And that is for a eshet Yisrael, she is rendered tmeah if she has an consensual extramarital affair. Now, she also will be negdar kizona, but that title as a zona has no impact on the Israel or husband because he has no restriction against marrying a zona. The only one that's impactful to him is the tumah. But she still has this shame zona that is associated with her, and therefore that shame zona that remains will make it that if she later is widowed, she will be restricted to a kohen. And that's similar to what the Balei HaTosafot said earlier, that when Rabba made a statement that eshet kohen shenansa bala lo kala mishum zona, that's not only for an eshet kohen, it also applies to an eshet Yisrael. Although from Rashi over here, it says that when Rashi says akol yu b'chlau zona, kol nivalot tachat baleim ben on b'onis ben baratzon b'chlau zona lo ikachu. They're all under that restriction. Shrei kulam nivalu bilatznut. That a raped woman who was a wife of Israel, she is outside of that rubric, and she is not considered to be a zona, and therefore her status remains that she is not a zona. That sounds more like the Balamor, that Rabba's statement is only about a Kohen, not about Israel. And that's how you have to understand here that machloka between the Balei Tosfot and the Balamor about what does it mean, a kol bichlal zona. Does that mean a kol bichlal zona means both Eshet Israel and Eshet Kohen? And Eshet Yisrael remains bichlal zona. The only thing that is taken out of that is there's no restriction against her returning to her husband because we eliminated the problem of tuma, but zona remains in the background even though it doesn't affect the husband who is Yisrael. Or do we say that when you remove the title tuma from her, it removes everything. She's totally cleared. And that might go back to what we said originally, that there is no restriction of zona on Yisrael. So is there a correlation between tuma and zona that they always coexist and therefore it remains, it just doesn't cause a problem? Or are they two separate items? And therefore it's possible that tuma might be an issue that applies to an Israelite, whereas zona is only something that's applicable to an eshet kohen and not to Israel at all. And that's the machlok between the Balei Tosafot and the Balamor. Now, ikadamre, there's another lashon of Rabba, which is Amar Abba, eshet kohen, shenansa, bala, lokal, la, mishum tuma. So instead of saying mishum zona, over here it says mishum tuma. So here the Gemara starts with the other position, which is Rabba saying that the eshet kohen that was raped has a problem of tuma, like we said before, lo yuchal bala rishon l'shuv l'kachta achar asher tu tuma. So that would be the restriction here, because she is v'hin nitma'ah, that's written by a sota, that makes her asura l'bala. So mishum tuma in, mishum zona lo. So now the Gemara asks the question in the opposite direction. Only problem because of problem of tuma, there's no problem with zona. Alma b'ones lo korinim be'zona. That means that when it's done non-consensually, the woman is not negdar kizona. So this is against what Rabba said earlier, that she is negdar kizona. Over here, the Nansa takes her out of the Parshia of Zona, but still leaves her in the world of Tuma, and he gets Malkot for the Tuma aspect of it. To that, Rabbi Zera challenges it like he challenged previously, which is, how could you say that Tuma is an Isur Lav? Meiti Rav Zera, lohi lo nitpasa asura, ha nitpasa muteret, v'yesh lecha acheret, shafu pish nitpasa asura, v'zuzu eshet kohen. The Lava Kmal asay, asay. The Eshet Israel is allowed to go back to her husband, but the Kohenet is not permitted to go back to her husband, and that's a say that allows her to go back to her husband, which is not true of the Kohen, and that's a lava ba michlal say. How can you claim that there are malkot over here? Amar Rabba, Rabba gives the same answer he gave before. Akul yu b'chlal acharei asher hu tam'ah. They were all under that restriction that is written by a Magzir Grushato, that comes out of the Tuma of our Pasuk here by Sota. It excluded her from the Parshia of Tuma. The Cloud Asia Kohen, the Kaima Kaima, remains in her status of being Tmeya. If she remains in her status of Tmeya, then she's still governed by the Isur Lav that applies by a Magzir Grushato. And because of that, you would get Malkot. But according to this second version of Rabbah, it's only Malkot for Tuma. There is no Malkot for Zona, because Zona is not a title that's applicable to a Eshet Kohen that was raped, because the only time someone is rendered a Zona with regards to Eshet Ish is when it was a consensual relationship. And here, in this second Lashon of Rabbah, the question of whether when we say Eshet Kohen, is it Dafka Eshet Kohen, or it applies to any Kohen, that they would get Malkot for Tuma? And the same question arises, does he then argue on Rav Sheshet? Rav Sheshet seems to think there is a problem even by an Eshet Yisrael that was Nansa. Now clearly in the second Lashon, Rabbah believes that Zona is not the issue, it's only a problem of Tuma. And by Tuma, he's saying that there still is a restriction. So it could be that he agrees with Rav Sheshet, and Rav Sheshet also thinks the problem is Tuma and not Zona. Or he could be arguing on Rav Sheshet and saying that there's no issue of Zona, whereas Rav Sheshet thinks there is an issue of Zona, and that's why he thinks it applies to an Eshet Yisrael. Okay, I'm going to stop here by the Mishnah on the bottom of Nuvav Amud Bet.